Today is Friday, August 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Hong Kong police have made more arrests related to the ongoing protests.
Police said that Wong and Agnes Chow are being investigated for their roles in an unauthorized protest outside a police station on June 21st.
The first legal challenge to prevent British Prime Minister Boris Johnson from suspending Parliament has been delayed in a Scottish court. And Hurricane Dorian is expected to continue strengthening over the weekend as it advances toward the U.S. mainland. All these stories are coming up next. China has recently rejected a formal submission from Hong Kong for a full withdrawal of an unpopular extradition bill. That's according to three government sources who spoke exclusively to Reuters news agency. VOA has not been able to independently verify those claims. The bill is a key issue that has sparked months of protests in the city. Some say China's rejection represents evidence of Beijing's control over Hong Kong's government's response to the protests and elicits questions of China's promise that Hong Kong would have a high degree of autonomy. Not long ago, Hong Kong chief executive Carrie Lam told local residents the bill had no future.
I reiterate here, there is no such plan. The bill is dead.
The bill is dead, but not withdrawn. Lam has stopped short of using that term, only saying work on the bill has stopped. The announcement didn't stop protests. They've lasted 12 straight weeks. In press conferences, Lam has not been clear on whether she has the autonomy to withdraw the bill herself. One source told Reuters, Lam herself has said that her hands are tied and that Beijing wouldn't allow her to withdraw the bill, prompting this question from Reuters senior correspondent James Pomfret.
Do you have the autonomy or not to withdraw the extradition bill, please?
Protesters' concerns have grown over the last few months, outlined in a list of five demands, including calls for fully democratic elections. Protesters are also demanding a probe into excessive use of police force during the protests. One source told Reuters the demands were outlined in Lam's proposals to Beijing and that President Xi Jinping was aware of them. Beijing has rejected all five demands. Lam's office did not comment directly on whether it has made a request to withdraw the bill. China's central government also did not respond to requests for comment. In addition, in recent weeks, there have been signs of Beijing taking a harder line, with officials likening the protests to terrorism, paramilitary police conducting drills near the border and pressuring Hong Kong companies to suspend staff that supported the protests. VOA's Jeff Custer has this story on multiple arrests made this week related to the protests.
Hong Kong police granted bail to well-known activist Joshua Wong and another core member of a pro-democracy group who were arrested Friday. Police said that Wong and Agnes Chow are being investigated for their roles in an unauthorized protest outside a police station on June 21st. Both face potential charges of participating in the demonstration and inciting others to join it. Wong also is being investigated for allegedly organizing the protest. In what appears to be a tougher stance on this summer's protests, authorities also denied permission for a major march Saturday. Organizers of that march said they were calling it off after an appeals board denied permission. The demonstration had been intended to mark the fifth anniversary of China's decision against allowing fully democratic elections for the leader of Hong Kong. It was unclear whether some protesters would still demonstrate on their own. Police have been rejecting more applications for demonstrations, citing violence during or after earlier ones. They're also arresting people for protests earlier this summer. Andy Chan, the leader of a pro-independence movement, was arrested at the airport Thursday night. Three others were taken in earlier this week for the vandalizing of the legislature's offices on July 1st. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Taiwanese Foreign Minister Joseph Wu spoke to VOA on Friday, and he explained why Taiwan has spoken out in support of the protests and criticized Beijing's reaction.
Taiwan is already a democracy. We have rule of law, and we protect human rights. And we come out of the old authoritarian days, and we know how important it is to have freedom and democracy and rule of law. And therefore, when we see what's happening in Hong Kong, we want the people in Hong Kong to enjoy the same degree of freedom and democracy and protection of human rights just as Taiwan. So whenever we see that the Chinese government or the Hong Kong government is violating those fundamental principles, we speak up.
However, he did add this caveat.
You know, when we see the situation in Hong Kong, we openly support freedom and democracy and aspiration of the Hong Kong people. But we do not intervene in the affairs in Hong Kong. We are telling the Chinese in an open way that do not blame what's happening in Hong Kong on non-existent foreign intervention. So just want to make it very clear. And we still have a law governing our relations with Hong Kong and Macau. And therefore, if there's any individual that seeks support from Taiwan, we would look at the situation and try to provide our necessary assistance based on the law governing our relations with Hong Kong and Macau.
It should be noted that China claims self-ruled and democratic Taiwan as its own and views it as a wayward province. The foreign minister also explained why he believes U.S.-Taiwan relations are the best they've been.
You can look at some specific cases. The president's transit through the United States to visit our allies in the Caribbean. She was very well treated while she was transiting through the United States. And this is one indicator. Another indicator is arms sale. We already have a 4 package of arms sale announcement from the United States, and the total value is more than 12 billion US dollars already, including MRM, which is very difficult to obtain from the United States in older days. And the recent announcement by the State Department that they will sell Taiwan the F-16B models. And in older days, it would also be very difficult. So if you put all this together, I think Taiwan-U.S. relations are very good.
The U.S. State Department says it is monitoring reports of military buildup near the administrative boundary line, or ABL, of the Russian-occupied Georgian region of South Ossetia. It calls on the Russian Federation to utilize all available channels to prevent further escalation of the situation along the ABL. In addition, a suicide bomber on a motorcycle killed 6 southern separatist fighters on the outskirts of the Yemeni city of Aden on Friday. According to witnesses, the attack was part of a surge of violence that has complicated a nearly 5-year-old war and undermined UN peace efforts. Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack. The first legal challenge to prevent British Prime Minister Boris Johnson from suspending Parliament has been delayed in a Scottish court. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has that update.
The Court of Session in Edinburgh has refused to take immediate action to prevent Johnson from suspending Parliament for several weeks. Judge Raymond Doherty, however, said a full hearing on the case will be heard on September 6, raising the prospect that the government's move could still be blocked. The decision, however, is a setback for a cross-party group of lawmakers seeking to broaden the period for parliamentary debate in a bid to prevent a disorderly departure by Britain from the EU. Charles de Ledesma, London.
Law professor Nick McCarroll at Glasgow Caledonian University said the decision to speed up the hearing may be significant because it indicates the matter is being treated with urgency. The case was brought by a cross-party group of legislators seeking to broaden the period for parliamentary debate in a bid to prevent a disorderly departure by Britain from the European Union. 2 other legal cases are in progress, one in Northern Ireland and another in London. Former Prime Minister John Major said on Friday he is seeking to join the case in London to argue against suspension. Major is an outspoken critic of Brexit who had vowed to intervene legally if Johnson sought to prevent parliamentary debate on the issue. The legal skirmishes are designed to prevent Johnson from substantially shortening the amount of time Parliament will be given to enact legislation that might prevent a no-deal Brexit that many economists believe would damage Britain's economy. Among other top stories in the world, marking the International Day of Victims of Enforced Disappearances, several human rights groups called on China to stop using the practice of disappearances to silence human rights defenders, dissidents, and other members of civil society. The death toll from the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo has topped 2,000. The WHO said the number of confirmed and probable cases also hit a milestone, climbing above 3,000. Thousands of people in Pakistan took to the streets Friday in mass demonstrations protesting India's decision to revoke the special status of Indian-controlled Kashmir. You'll find extended coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our mobile app. This is VOA News.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Controversy over refugee and immigration policies in the Trump administration continues unabated. On this encore edition of Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel and Min Dao, editor in VOA's Vietnamese service, talk with Oan No Usadi, who fled South Vietnam and arrived in the United States as a refugee. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Days after stepping down, Italy's ex-premier Giuseppe Conte accepted the role of premier designate on Thursday in a bid to cobble together a new coalition of longtime political foes aimed at blocking a power grab by Matteo Salvini, the right-wing leader whose anti-migrant crackdowns and Eurosceptic provocations have dominated Italian politics for more than a year. Josephine McKenna is an Italian-based reporter who has been covering the story. So, Josephine, as we go into the weekend, what can you tell us about really the new coalition government that Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte wants to form?
Well, at the moment, this Italian government is still in upheaval. The Prime Minister-designate Giuseppe Conte, who was up until now Prime Minister and has been charged with forming a new government, is trying to get the parties together. He's having separate talks with party leaders and trying to form a new government coalition between two centre-left parties. Now, the hardline Interior Minister Matteo Salvini from the far-right League Party has really been sidelined and formally left his position as Interior Minister yesterday. So we're waiting for this coalition to be put together, and then the Prime Minister would go back to the President next week, and he would have to approve this new cabinet before the government officially takes effect.
Now, the previous government had pretty much a very hard line against incoming migrants to Italy. Is there any indication what a new government may have towards those that are trying to come into the country?
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens. It's unlikely that this new government would be as tough as Matteo Salvini, the former Interior Minister, and there's talk of winding back some of his security decrees where he banned NGOs from moving in to try and rescue migrants and threatening them with very heavy fines. So there's a possibility that will be wound back. But what's interesting here is just this week, the Transport Minister and the Defence Minister both endorsed a ban from this outgoing minister to stop the current migrant ship, the Mare Jonio, from landing in Italy. So some of these ministers may still be involved in the new government, and so it's difficult to get a handle on just how tough their approach might be. I don't think we're going to go back to the old days of seeing migrants, thousands of migrants landing on Italian shores, but perhaps this new government won't be as harsh as the previous government.
Speaking of migrant vessels, migrants aboard vessels coming to Italy, there has been another vessel that has some you know, rescued some 100 migrants in the Mediterranean earlier this week. What can you tell us about the latest developments about that vessel?
Well, that vessel rescued 98 migrants from a dinghy just off the coast of Libya, and that included women, children, some pregnant women indeed, and very young children under the age of 10. The government took a very hard line, saying that this ship would not be allowed to dock in Italy. In the meantime, 64 migrants have been allowed off that ship overnight. They've landed in Lampedusa off the coast of Sicily, and now the NGO involved, called Mediterranean Saving Humans, is appealing to the Italian government to allow the rest of the migrants off the ship, saying that those migrants are now running out of water. So very difficult conditions there, and an urgent appeal to save everyone on board.
Josephine McKenna reports out of Italy. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Hurricane Dorian is expected to continue strengthening over the weekend as it advances towards the U.S. state of Florida. The National Hurricane Center said a mid-morning Friday that the storm has a maximum sustained winds of 175 kilometers per hour, making it a Category 3 major storm. But Ken Graham, director of the U.S. National Hurricane Center, says that may not be the strongest the storm gets.
We are forecasting the potential of a Category 4 storm, 130 miles an hour, by the time we make landfall in Florida.
He also notes the speed of the storm may be problematic.
Slow is never our friend. So what that means is you'll have a longer period of time where you can get some of those hurricane force winds, a longer period of time that you can get the rainfall, torrential rainfall, and a longer period of time that you can have that onshore flow on the right-hand side of that storm.
Graham tells those in the storm's path not to make light of things.
Serious situation. All modes of the impacts from a hurricane are in play. The storm surge, the rain, and the wind. A few days to get ready, and the biggest thing is get the latest information.
Florida resident Gail Morton is concerned.
I've been through Andrew. I've been through Wilma. I've been through Irma, and I don't want to go through this one.
However, Sabrina Saru isn't as much.
Wine, lots of water, sandwich meats. Yeah, I'm not scared. It's South Florida. We see hurricanes all the time.
But Tracy Jackson, the Broward County Regional Emergency Services Director, urged all residents to be ready.
At this point, it's all about preparation. Everyone should have already had an idea what they're going to do when the storm's threatening.
Forecasters expect Dorian to make landfall on Florida's east coast on Monday evening. A new report finds Syria to be the only country in the world still using cluster munitions, which are banned under an international treaty. Lisa Schlein was at the launch of the annual Landmine and Cluster Munition Monitor report.
Syria remains the sole outlier in a world that is moving toward ridding itself of cluster munitions. The Cluster Munition Coalition is calling on the Syrian government to immediately stop using these inhumane weapons and says its Russian ally must refrain from being complicit in their use. Advocacy Director of Human Rights Watch Mary Wareham says most of the cluster munitions attacks last year were in Idlib governorate. Syrian forces are waging a fierce battle to reclaim this last rebel stronghold. Wareham tells VOA Russia has been assisting Syria in its military operations for the last few years. While it may not be directly involved in the attacks, she says Russia is enabling the Syrian government in these nefarious acts.
We know that cluster munitions have been loaded onto planes at Russia's airbase in Syria, that Russia has assisted the Syrian government in the use of cluster munitions. They haven't really denied using cluster munitions, but they haven't straight out admitted to supporting the Syrian government to use cluster munitions.
Wareham says the vast majority of cluster munitions used in Syria have been manufactured in the Soviet Union or in Russia in past decades. On a more positive note, she says the monitor could not find evidence of the continued use of cluster bombs in Yemen.
The last attacks that Cluster Munition Monitor documented were in early 2017 by the Saudi-led coalition. I think that shows that the stigma against cluster munitions is sticking, and even countries outside the convention can be influenced by what it says in terms of prohibiting cluster munitions.
Wareham says Saudi Arabia does not produce cluster munitions, but has received them, most notably from the United States and also Brazil and Britain. She says the U.S. has not produced these weapons in the past year. To date, 106 countries have joined the Convention on Cluster Munitions. Major holdouts include China, Russia, the United States, India, Pakistan, Iran, and Israel. The report finds states' parties to the convention have destroyed 99% of their stockpiles, or nearly 1.5 million cluster munitions and more than 178 million submunitions. Last year, it recorded 149 casualties, a significant decrease from previous years. The vast majority of casualties were civilians, not military. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And you're listening to VOA News.
In late August, a judge in the state of Oklahoma ordered the large U.S. drug manufacturer, Johnson & Johnson, to pay $572 million for helping to fuel the state's opioid epidemic. On this encore edition of the program, host Carol Castiel discusses the roots and ramifications of the opioid addiction crisis in America. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed, voanews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Scientists warn that Greenland's melting ice sheet is a real doomsday scenario. Rising temperatures and record heat this summer accelerated what has already been a much faster thaw than seen in previous years. VOA's Arash Abbasadi has more on this, featuring NASA's Josh Willis, lead scientist with the OMG project.
Sometimes modern problems call for classic solutions. This rebuilt DC-3 plane, originally constructed in 1942 for the Second World War, now flies missions helping NASA scientists research one of the biggest threats to human survival.
So each one of these giant blue boxes is filled with probes, which we're dropping into the ocean and using to measure just how much the oceans are warming and how that affects me.
Josh Willis is lead scientist for NASA's Oceans Melting Greenland, or OMG, project. He and his team are researching which is the bigger threat to glaciers, warmer air above or warmer waters below.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, drop, drop, drop.
They do that by dropping probes into the ice.
Probe is starting talking back to the plane, and we have a signal. That means the probe's alive.
Next comes observation.
It's gone all the way down to 700 meters, and it'll probably go to 8. It might even go to 1,000. A few of these fjords are that deep.
Scientists say this ice sheet today melts 6 times faster than it did 20 years ago.
We're literally watching the Greenland ice sheet disappear right before our very eyes. And this is having an impact all around the planet. We all share one ocean. So 1 billion tons of ice lost here raises sea levels all across the world by a measured amount.
Measuring that amount is the whole point of the study.
If it happens at a rate where we're looking at many feet of sea level rise in the next 50 or 100 years, that it's going to have a huge impact for cities all across the planet. Billions of people live near the sea and will be affected by this rise. And in fact, they're already beginning to be affected today.
The OMG project is currently in the 4th year of its 5-year mission. Scientists say if the world stays on its current path, climate change may ruin life as we know it. Just recently, amid concerns of rising sea levels, Indonesia announced plans to move its capital from Jakarta to the island Borneo. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
And taking a quick look back in time, it was on this day back in 1945 that U.S. General Douglas MacArthur arrived in Japan to set up Allied occupation headquarters. And in 1963, the hotline communications link between Washington and Moscow went into operation. And in 1983, Gion S. Bluford Jr. became the first black African-American astronaut to travel in space as he blasted off aboard the Space Shuttle Challenger. And with that, that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of producer Dan Brown, engineer Nick Ivanoff, and managing editor Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for listening. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Make it a great weekend.